Blog Talk Radio.
All right. It looks like there was a little technical difficulty starting off today's broadcast. This is Paul Von Hartmann coming to you live from Ashland, Oregon, in southern Oregon, on the west coast of California, of North America, and hopefully we'll have some audience participation in this one-hour broadcast entitled Cannabis versus Climate Change, the Way Forward. And there are several things I'd like to talk about before we start accepting call-in participants. One of them is that I think it's important to point out the current news is being overwhelmed with concern about the coronavirus and the relationship between cannabis and the coronavirus is that several components within the cannabis plant are effective in antibacterial activity and can be applied as preventative measures and also as safe and effective herbal treatments for symptoms and the causes of not only the coronavirus, but other pathogens that we're exposed to potentially. So the good news is that there is an application for several parts of the cannabis plant in different ways to help with being this illness. And the sooner people learn about these antibacterial and antiviral properties of cannabis, the more effective it'll be. So let me begin by just referring to a peer-reviewed article in the antibacterial review journal bioresources.com. And this was a study that was, or a review that was published in 2014. So presumably there is more information that can be found, more up-to-date information and further studies than the ones I'm going to be referring to here. Article by Kahn et al. Is Hemp Antibacterial Review. And the antibacterial activity of hemp extracts is shown in Table 2 that lists the five major cannabinoids, the CBD, CBC, CBG, Delta-9 THC, and CBN, as all having potent activity against a variety of methicillin-resistant MRSA strains. So the superbugs that are developing resistance to the antibiotics that have worked up to this point in time are susceptible to the antibacterial activity cannabis. The crude aqueous acetone extract of the leaves is effective in inhibiting against bacteria P. aeruginosa and V. cholerae and fungi C. neoformans and Candida albicans. Other extracts from the seeds, actually the seed oil, has pronounced activity against several bacteria, including B. subtilis, S. aureus, that's Staphylococcus aureus, moderate activity against E. coli, and high activity against P. aeruginosa. So, in addition, the seed oil also inhibits the growth of A. niger, E. coli, S. aureus, S. cerevisiae, and P. aeruginosa. So, I mean, the article goes on, or the review goes on, to conclude that the antibacterial activity of hemp and other fiber plants has been reviewed, suggesting that natural fiber plants could serve as a potential source of antibacterial components and can be utilized effectively without being wasted. Cannabinoids, alkaloids, other bioactive compounds, or phenolic compounds of lignin may contribute to the antibacterial character of hemp. Now, that was a quote from the closing statements of Hemp Antibacterial Review, published in BioResources in 2014. It can be found at bioresources.com. And I'd also like to mention that there are antimicrobial properties associated with the fiber of the cannabis plant. So not only the extracts, but also the fiber itself has antibacterial and antimicrobial properties. So if in being used in making masks for healthcare workers and bandages and things like that that can help to defeat the infections at every point of contact are invaluable at a time, particularly at the beginning of a situation as the one we have currently. So the good news is there are things that we can do to deal with the threats we face, and many of them are sourced from the cannabis plant. These antimicrobial and antiviral agents can be applied in the environment because they're non-toxic to fish and wildlife. They are toxic to mosquitoes, however, which is another way in which the vector of distribution can be impacted by a safe and effective pesticide, which cannabis offers as well. So, when we're looking at a holistic approach to containing pathogens, including the coronavirus and including MRSA and other things that can impact our health, looking at this plant as an effective tool for doing that can only give us the advantage that we need at a time when we need it. And anybody who's still worried about THC in relation to the threat of these pathogens that are seriously affecting people's health and well-being, those concerns need to be reconsidered, because the things that are threatening our health are far worse than anything that anybody has ever dreamed up THC can do to the human body, which in fact has been disproven time and time again in the research that's been done on the cannabis plant, showing that THC is actually good for the human body and can actually help us heal in many ways and prevent us from getting sick in the first place. So I think it's important to take an objective look at cannabis as a solution rather than as a problem. And I think many people are coming to that realization that we were born into a system that used the absence of cannabis against most of us who don't have the what I consider to be the misfortune of being in the 1%. The 1% are in a very tough place because their position in life depends on their wealth. And unfortunately, the more important consideration over wealth is well-being and health. And cannabis offers us that, whereas the opulent wealth enjoyed by the 1% is a very limited resource in terms of its actual value. Cannabis has unlimited actual value, and you can appreciate that by considering what you would choose to do if you were on a deserted island out in the middle of the ocean somewhere, and a barrel of petroleum washed up on the shore right next to a case of fresh fertile hemp seeds that you could plant and grow. Which one would you open? And the obvious choice is the hemp seed, because you can sustain yourself with that. And unfortunately, our grandfathers chose the barrel of oil, and we are left with a polluted island. The barrel's almost empty, and people are fighting over the remaining fossil fuels resources. The wars for oil have killed more people in the last 100 years than anything else. And so it's important to understand that the systems that we are connected by and within are working according to what we put into them. And if we choose to use the toxic energy and the gaiacidal industries to make our lives what they are, then it's a poor choice, and future generations, our children and our grandchildren, are going to suffer for it. If we have decided that we want to disengage from the fossil fuels industry, then we need to take steps for doing that in a timely way, and recognizing that cannabis is not illegal. It's not even merely valuable. It is absolutely critically essential, and the window of opportunity for utilizing it in an effective way is rapidly closing. To that point, we have currently an outlaw regime in the United States that is being controlled by the fossil fuels industry, and eliminating any restrictions on the exploitation of obsolete resources that are gaiacidal to all life on Earth and the Earth itself. So we need to take a look at the means of changing the way our society is being misled, and recognizing that we are in an emergency preparedness situation that requires extraordinary means to achieve an end that will benefit everyone. And it occurred to me the other day that the incumbent outlaw regime has been choreographed by foreign interests with the sole purpose of perpetuating the fossil fuels industry and the military-industrial industry and the other gaiacidal industries that currently bring so much wealth to so few people. And so if we look at all of the options available for removing this outlaw regime, then we have to consider that the Uniform Code of Military Justice is probably the most potent and immediate jurisdiction can be used to remove an outlaw president and the co-conspirators with which he has carried out the interests of foreign governments in order to essentially undermine our democracy. And I trust that people recognize that the incumbent regime has conspired in a coordinated fashion by violating their sacred oaths during the Senate trial and openly bragged about not honoring the objectivity that is required in a trial, blocking the witnesses, blocking the testimony of people like John Bolton, and also not allowing the documentation to be entered into the trial. So it really was not a trial. It was not a vindication of the president. It wasn't anything other than an exercise in pointless indulgence. And it really was unconvincing. So now what do we do? Well, I think military has been attacked enough by our commander-in-chief and the intelligence services and the foreign services, and our veterans and our foreign allies have all been betrayed enough by the incumbent regime, which continues to erode the integrity of our national security and our national defenses. The latest assault on our national security is the decision to let coronavirus-infected people back into the country before they were well. And it just it can only be seen as another strategy for undermining the security of the United States. Germ warfare is part of the possible ways in which our country can be impacted. And that's another reason why it's so important to recognize the true value of the cannabis plant in making that holistic defense actual and real, rather than just talking about it. I think at this point, I'd like to invite people to call in. We've got about another 40 minutes in today's broadcast. Again, my name is Paul von Hartmann. I'm coming to you live this Sunday afternoon, March 1st, from Ashland, Oregon, and just throwing out some ideas and hoping that people find value in them and can contact their elected officials, as I have. I've phoned Senator Ron Wyden and Senator Jeff Merkley and in Oregon, and have tweeted to various political leaders, including Bernie Sanders and Tulsi Gabbard and other people who may have some ideas about using the Uniform Code of Military Justice to remove this president. I've also spoken briefly about it on Tom Hartman's program and talked with Senator Pocan, Wisconsin. And they weren't sure whether or not the UCMJ was the appropriate vehicle for holding this regime accountable. But it certainly is, I think, a more forceful and direct way than waiting until November and taking the chance that the foreign interests who are working to re-elect Trump are successful again, as they were in the last election, which calls Trump's legitimacy into question, because it's been established that our elections were impacted and affected by Russian influence, and is happening again with the problems that we're seeing on the internet and the trolling that's going on and the interference with the civil discourse in the United States being invaded by people who are not from this country and who don't have our best interests at heart. So I think it's time to recognize that even if the elections do occur in November, which I seriously doubt Trump will allow to happen, the elections based on some excuse or another, whether it's the coronavirus or something else, I can't imagine that now that the Russians have control of America's president and Senate, that they'll be willing to relinquish that control so easily as having an election. But the mainstream media bias against Bernie Sanders and the just vicious attacks on the 99% by the elitist DNC and the Trumpist Republicans is just it's insidious. And expecting that most Americans are going to understand the forces working against us is just too big a chance to take. And so I think it's the responsibility of the military to remove an outlaw chief executive who is not above the law. No one is above the law. And while a Justice Department memo may be enough to suspend the Constitution for some people, it certainly doesn't seem like a Justice Department memo should overrule the law of the land, in my opinion. So if there's anybody out there who would like to join the conversation and shed more light on why the UCMJ might be an effective means of removing this president before November, please feel welcome to call in at 516-387-1507. Again, the guest call-in number is 516-387-1507. And I look forward to your call. In the meantime, I think it would be helpful to take a look at the means of streamlining the hemp industry in the United States in order to take advantage of all of the different properties that this plant has to offer at a time when we really do need for people to understand why cannabis is essential to our sustainable existence on this planet. Now, in my book, Cannabis versus Climate Change, How Hot Does Earth Have to Get Before All Solutions Are Considered, I talk about the different relationships and the different properties of the plant, but in the years since I published Cannabis versus Climate Change, and also posted the films on Vimeo by the same title, it's occurred to me that there's a better way to explain the dynamic that needs to be consciously initiated between cannabis and our social evolution and the global environment. And that dynamic is what I have written about and referred to as Gaia therapeutic industry. And the defining characteristic of Gaia therapeutic industry is that it ties the productivity to environmental healing. And so a growth economy can be sustainable if that growth is healing to the environment. If an economy is vested in toxic, unevenly distributed, finite resources, then the result, eventual result, is systemic collapse, because toxic resources cannot be attributed value indefinitely. They need to be recognized as toxic and discontinued, and that's the point that we're at with fossil fuels. But with cannabis and the different parts of the plant that offer us different things, the actual act of growing the plant is of such great benefit to the earth that if we couldn't make one single thing out of the cannabis plant, we'd still have to grow it for its environmental services. So it's interesting to take a look at what would happen if cannabis was recognized as mankind's functional interface with the natural order. What if cannabis is the one crop that offers so many unique and essential properties and components that make our lives function, that we actually cannot achieve sustainability on this planet without it? That's the point that we've come to now, as we recognize that we can't sustain our consumption of fossil fuels and timber and fish, and we can't exhaust the soils of our farmlands indefinitely and create eroded landscapes where, in the presence of regenerative agriculture, inclusive of cannabis in the rotations, could have a sustainable agricultural source of not only biofuels of various types, but also the highest quality proteins and the safest and most effective herbal therapeutics, the best biodegradable building materials and biodegradable plastics. We could be making cloth that has better solar protective properties than the cotton that's currently being used for clothing. All of these different commodities and products that are available to us can also serve as the means of healing Earth's atmosphere. And that is the object of the game, to heal Earth's atmosphere, because in truth, we have nothing to fear but the atmosphere itself. If we don't fix climate change, then it really won't matter what we do fix. And that sounds like kind of a gloomy prediction, but the truth is that we actually can fix it. We just need to start doing what needs to be done on a scale that is going to make a difference. Years ago, when the boreal forests were intact, and the oceans were healthy, and the phytoplankton was abundant. The atmospheric aerosol terpenes that shield the Earth from the sun were at about twice the concentration that they are now. And so the solar protective effect of the terpenes in the atmosphere that were generated by the boreal forests and the phytoplankton has been essentially cut in half over the last 50 years. And the forests that remain are dying off, accelerating rate because of the temperature increases, the increased UVB radiation at the northern latitudes, the insect population booms that are resulting from the increased temperatures, and the acidification of the rain by the increased carbon content of the atmosphere. All of these things are accelerating the degeneration of the systems that determine the quality of our lives. So if people are concerned with climate change and they're concerned with overpopulation and world hunger and opioid epidemic and rampant civil unrest throughout the world and mass migrations, the key is to create a livable environment on every continent so that people don't have to flee their countries that are being ravaged by drought and war and famine. And people don't have to depend on centralized resources in countries that have managed to, you know, bite and claw their way to the top of the pyramid. And it's inevitable that if we don't balance the economic disparity and the aggression that's growing as the result of the systemic imbalances of various types that affect our lives, then we'll be headed for irreversible systemic collapse. And we can see the initial stages of it now, which is why the emergency preparedness protocols that are available to us need to be initiated. The essential civilian demand for cannabis as a strategic resource needs to be initiated before this spring. The people who are pledging to finance the solutions to climate change, like Jeff Bezos has recently pledged $10 billion to cure climate change. Well, that $10 billion can be turned into $10 trillion if it is invested properly. And at the same time, that money can generate the healing that's needed so that people have somewhere to live in the future. Because currently, the scenario that we're headed for is dire. And the people that will suffer the worst of it are the young people, particularly the young people who will remember how things used to be and how wonderful life used to be when the environment wasn't in critical imbalance and the systemic collapse had made things hopeless. Right now, we have a chance to avoid that unthinkable future. Right now, we have the opportunity to recognize that this spring, we need to plant cannabis as much as we can in every soil and climate condition to where it may be able to adapt, and pray it's not too late. And in order to do that, the infrastructure for processing the harvest needs to be in place by the fall, when all of that hemp can then be turned into usable products in a way that can be standardized and made very efficient and can help human evolution grow into regional energy security and regional food security and nutrition through cannabis agriculture, and using cannabis as a tool to help other crops grow, because the agronomic properties of cannabis are advantageous to growing other crops, and the protein content of cannabis seed is such that we can feed it to animals, and we can feed it to fish, and we can feed it to birds, and we can back off of the oceans and stop overfishing the oceans, and we can provide people with a healthy alternative to meat products, where they can find the nutrition that is actually better than what they're eating now, and is also better for the earth. Again, just the act of farming cannabis or the act of gardening with cannabis is something that is healing to the earth, it's healing to the gardeners and the farmers, and it's healing to society at large, because the distribution, the redistribution of essential resources happens in an organic way. It happens without drawbacks. There's no downside to a cannabis-based economy. I'm certainly open to hearing others who may disagree with me. I'd be interested to know where my rationale is perhaps faulty. I don't know. I'm just a guy. I don't pretend to know all the answers, but you know, when the solutions seem so obvious and nobody else seems to be pointing them out, then that's what motivated me to step up and say the things that I've been saying for 30 years now. If people go to the internet and they want to see what it was like 30 years ago talking about cannabis, they can go and find my film on Vimeo entitled Cannabis Versus Climate Change. See that these things were obvious to me 30 years ago, and I'm still talking about the same things, and watching our planet degenerate and our economic structures crumble and our society going off the rails, particularly our political leadership. So if people would like to call in and comment on any of this, we've got about another 20 minutes left for this broadcast. And I think next Sunday I'm probably going to take a break from Blog Talk Radio. But if people would like to get in touch with me, they can certainly reach me at my email address, which is projectpeace@yahoo.com. They can also find my writing online at the California Cannabis Ministry blog. And I should explain a little bit about the California Cannabis Ministry. It's an individual ministry. It's a secular, non-religious ministry, and it really just exists to share information about the cannabis plant with people that will help them to develop respect for nature, and also see that really respect for nature and the golden rule are the only two sort of guide rails that we need for living. And those two guide rails are what the California Cannabis Ministry is about. It's about individual responsibility for the truth. It's about respect for nature. It's about helping people when you can. And if you'd like to help with what I'm trying to do, you certainly are invited to find the PayPal button at the California Cannabis Ministry blog and send me a vote of practical support. I've been doing this for 30 years. I've been working for you for 30 years, whether you know it or not. So if you feel that you'd like to see this message amplified and see the positive actions begin to take effect and have some effect, then I welcome support from people who share the goals that I have pointed out and you want to make a difference, because we don't really have much time left. And that's the other part of this that's kind of sobering, is that time is the limiting factor in the equation of survival. And it's been pointed out recently that we have less time to fix these things than we've been told or that we thought we had. And I've known that. I've anticipated our being behind the curve in our realization of where we are in the paradigm that we've created. And so I think it's important to accelerate the process of in recognition that the degeneration is accelerating and the feedback loops are operating to affect nonlinear extinction level events and cascading systems failures that the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change pointed out in 2014, six years ago, the same year I published Cannabis versus Climate Change. But it's time to share this information with people who can take it to the next level. People like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and Amory Lovins at the Rocky Mountain Institute and Hunter Lovins at the Rocky Mountain Institute. All those people are much more sort of engaged on a level that can benefit from this perspective. And certainly everybody knows somebody who knows somebody who can help to share this information, to vet it and to make sure that, you know, the things that I'm saying are actually true. Because at this point, you know, much of it is theory, and it seems like fairly obvious conclusions that could be drawn from the relationships that I've pointed out, but I think it's important for people to take an objective look at what I'm saying and make up their minds for themselves. But at the same time, you know, realize that the consequence of hesitating is greater than any potential consequences for proceeding. So, you know, the worst thing that can happen if we wind up planting a lot of cannabis is that we will solve world hunger. You know, I mean, the downside of my being wrong is still good news. And the upside of my being right is that our children and grandchildren have a livable planet to live in, rather than a burned out, endless war torn rock in the middle of space. And I really hope that information is good news, hopeful news, positive news, in a world where there's very little of that going on right now. And there are things that people are doing to generate clean energy, but unfortunately, generating clean energy is not enough. It's important to repair the atmosphere. And because cannabis is uniquely qualified to replenish Earth's atmosphere with the aerosol terpenes that have been lost with the deaths of the boreal forests and the marine phytoplankton, then it's a good place to start and to see how we can standardize the equipment and the energy production and the distribution of seed so that people on every continent grow what they need for themselves, and nobody will have to fight over limited resources. Dolphin economics, a 35-million-year-old economic structure, can be adopted by our species so that we too can learn to live for 35 million years like the dolphins have through dolphin economics. You help me help you help everyone, and recognize that there is no money on a burned out planet. People have to apply their wealth in a way that makes sense. Otherwise, everyone will suffer. No one will be immune from the consequences of inaction. And so in the last 10 minutes or so that I have, I invite people to call in to 516-387-1507. That's 516-387-1507 to share your thoughts about the way forward that I've outlined, and hopefully by the next broadcast, I'll have my technical expertise honed, and we'll be able to share more insights. There have been a lot of questions and logical conclusions that have occurred to me over the past week that are actually of enormous economic value. And so as a product development specialist in the cannabis industry, I offer my services to anyone who would like to make $1 trillion, and recognize that we're in the middle of at the beginning of the shift from the fossil fuels based military industrial economy to an agriculturally based cannabis inclusive economy. And it's out of necessity, it's out of environmental necessity, and it's possible because we have the infrastructure available currently to make a coordinated transition rather than waiting until our society degenerates to the point of social unrest and the structures that we depend on for our social order are compromised to the point of collapse. And that's currently what the incumbent regime is achieving by dismantling our foreign services and dismantling our alliances around the world. They are effectively undermining the United States of America in cooperation with foreign governments who seek to take control of this country. And it is naive to think that there's only one level of aggression by the Russians or by anyone else who is trying to manipulate Trump and McConnell and Graham and the rest of the what I call the Republicans, because they're just conning us. I have a caller who just called in from the 808 area code. Who can I welcome to the show today?
Hi. Hey, Paul, this is Rick.
Rick, why Rick? From Hawaii.
Yeah, it's been tough trying to get into your radio program today.
Well, we got kind of a rough connection, Rick.
Okay. Should I try?
But I can hear you
now. I'll try calling back then.
No.
I'll try calling back.
You sound good. You sound good now.
Okay, man. I've been trying to call in, but haven't been able to figure out the technology. Good program so far, Paul. Just wondered if you touched base on Bernie Sanders' announcement at the debates. Man, he covered all the bases on that one.
Yes, he did, and that's why I support Bernie. But at the same time, I really think that the Joint Chiefs need to be convened and that Trump needs to be removed from office before November. And I think, we need to have an election in November, but I think any president who's been impeached should not be eligible for a second term. There should be a consequence to impeachment, and I think the Republicans are going to need to find somebody else before November.
Well, besides that, it seems like we do have at least a person stepping up to represent the needs of the nation, and it seems to go right in line with your push of cannabis versus climate change. So I just wanted to say I was real happy to hear at least one candidate step up and really put it as in the forefront.
Yeah, and I appreciate your pointing that out. I think it's important to recognize that Senator Sanders has a very very well informed campaign, and in fact I sent him a copy of my book back in 2016 when he was running, so I'm hoping that he's read it. Whether or not he's able to work it in before he's elected or not, it's kind of a controversial thing to campaign with, but he does have a copy of my book, so I hope that it serves.
Yeah, well, it looks good so far. From what I can see is over 60% of the nation approves the legalization of cannabis. So that's going to be a push in the right direction to get the seeds in the ground.
Absolutely, and I think once people make the connection between cannabis and climate change, I think things could happen very quickly.
Yeah, the other angle that I wanted to touch base with you briefly on is out here in Hawaii, Monsanto, really took off with the genetically modified corn and soy back in the late 1980s, early 1990s. It is now their product is the largest export from the island at this point in time. Just recently, with the USDA making a move to try to set the limit so low on hemp production at 0.3% THC for the flowers, it's kind of pushing the entire hemp production into what will likely become a genetically modified hemp. What are your feelings on genetically modified hemp?
Well, genetically modified hemp is an abomination. It is an insult to the 35 million year old process of cannabis evolution that they think that they can short circuit. And the first question is, what benefit is there to reducing THC in the cannabis plant? And the answer is there's no benefit to it. And there are a lot of reasons not to do it. So in my opinion, genetically modified, genetically engineered organisms should be banned. We don't understand enough about them to tinker with something we don't understand. So I think people need to run Monsanto out of the Hawaiian Islands before they do permanent damage to the ecosystems there. There is just no way to control genetically engineered crops, and there's a lot of advantages to, and that's one of them.
All right, Paul. Yeah, I want to give a little plug then on the GMO exposing what has gone on over here. A movie came out earlier this year called Poisoning Paradise, which looked specifically at what Monsanto has done in
what's
soy.
What's the name of that film again? Poisoning Paradise?
Poisoning Paradise, yes. And really points out the dangers. Yeah.
Oh, I've just got one more minute, so you got about 30 seconds.
Okay, Paul, just wanted to say, hey, thanks a lot for stepping up, and next time I'll try to get a little more on top of this. I just couldn't figure out how to get your program up, but, hey, really appreciate you getting out there for us.
All right, Rick, thanks for calling in. And thanks for listening to our broadcast today. Everybody who tuned in or everybody who finds us on the internet later on, again, feel welcome to get in touch with Paul Von Hartmann at projectpeace@yahoo.com. And stay tuned for other episodes, though I think I'm probably going to skip next Sunday and spend some time with my lad, doing fun things around Southern Oregon. So get in touch by email and talk to you later. In the meantime, stay positive and have fun.